Today on Basic, comedian Eric Andre.
Tom Green came out when I was in 11th grade, and then Jackass came out when I was in 12th grade, and then Ollie G Show came out when I was a freshman in college. So it was like these three pranks. It was like...
That's the triumvirate for you?
Yeah, because I was like, oh, that's the first time I saw people doing comedy where they were getting arrested and they were getting hurt. I was like, that's like, it doesn't get more high stakes. Like, they were ending up in the hospital or they were ending up in jail. And then I saw all these like comedians on MTV doing high stakes pranks where they were like putting their safety and their personal health in jeopardy just for a laugh. And it was just so mind blowing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Basic, the official podcast of the unofficial history of cable television. I'm Doug Herzog, a former TV executive, and I thought this show was the world's most uncomfortable talk show.
And I'm Jen Chaney, TV critic at Vulture and New York Magazine. And at the beginning of every show, I fling myself into a desk and break my arm.
Jen, our guest today is Eric Andre, probably best known as the creator and host of Adult Swim's hilarious, surreal, and idiosyncratic talk show, The Eric Andre Show.
Eric has starred in and produced this riff on the traditional talk show format since 2012, and it's returning for a new sixth season in June after a three-year hiatus.
All right, and we don't have any desks to trash on this set, so let's get right into
it. Yourself, Doug.
So let's get right into it with Eric Andre, and Jen and I will be back after to chat and assess the damage. Eric Andre, welcome to Basic. We start the show the same way each week, which is we ask our guests, do you remember the first time you saw cable television?
Yeah, actually. Well, I was born in 83. I remember my dad being really excited about watching boxing on HBO, and I couldn't really, tell what he was excited about. And because I was young, but then I remembered I got MTV and I could watch Beastie Boys music videos. And then I remember we didn't have Comedy Central at first. And then my uncle and my cousins came down from Rochester with a VHS tape of Mystery Science Theater 3000. And I was like, what is this? I was like, why can't I want to watch this. This is the best. Like, why can't I, where do I get this? And I would like call Comcast and ask them to like have Comedy Central available. And it was like years before we got Comedy Central.
Wow.
Full disclosure here. And this might end the interview right now, abruptly, but, I canceled Mystery Science Theater off of Comedy Central in the '90s. And I still get hate mail on the internet. Like 30 years later, they had a very dedicated and mean spirited audience, is what I
heard. Very hostile audience. Well, when I was like 9 years old, I want to say they are the reason I knew Comedy Central existed, and I got into Comedy Central via MST3K as a little kid. Mm-hmm. So. You made the biggest mistake in your life.
Maybe there's a reason we never worked together, Eric. That might be it.
We're in the middle of season three, and this is the first I'm hearing this. I would never have agreed to co-host the show if I had known.
Yeah, it's a blight on my record. There's no
question. Wait, why did you cancel them? Was it just
because it had no ratings? Everybody loved it. It got a lot of press, and you know, when I got to Comedy Central, it was still the only things on there were Mystery Science Theater, Benny Hill. Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect, Dr. Katz,
Kids in the Hall,
and none of them got any ratings. They were all sort of well loved. I was like, well, we got to find some shit to get some ratings. But
so did you cancel every? You canceled everything?
No. Dr. Katz ran for a while. Bill Maher quit. He went to ABC.
Right.
Benny Hill. that was what. What the big show was absolutely fabulous. That was the highest rated.
Oh
show.
Yeah.
That's so weird. I was just talking to Ab to Sarah Squirm about. Ab Fab like yesterday.
Great show.
Yeah.
What were you guys talking about? I love her.
I was like they should redo Ab Fab as a movie with like Sarah Squirm and I don't know.
That's a great idea.
Z-Way or somebody. You know what I mean?
Oh like, my God, I love that idea.
They should do but they should do it like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas style where they're not just drunks, they're like drug addicts too.
I mean, Ab Fab was a huge hit. I mean, it got like really big ratings on a network nobody had and nobody watched.
I watched it.
No, I'm saying, but nobody watched Comedy Central other than Ab Fab for the most part.
Well, I watched Mystery Science Theater.
Ab, Fab Fab is a perfect show. It like, it's just two British women just hammered, like bopping around. but
that is literally the log line for the show.
Yeah. It's like, just fucking don't overthink it. Just get these two charismatic women drunk everywhere. And like, it's let just perfect. It's perfect. Yeah. They were like the proto Jennifer Coolidge archetypes.
Yes, that's absolutely true. So I'm curious, you went to the Berklee School of Music and you studied, I think you played, was it stand-up bass?
Yeah.
Was your original plan, like, did you want to be in an orchestra? Like, what was your original?
I was in an orchestra and that was no plan of mine. That was a horrendous accident. No, I wanted to be a musician, mm-hmm. but... Who were your
bass heroes, Eric?
That's not an easy path. Charles Mingus, Charlie Hayden. You ready to lose your audience? You ready to put everybody to sleep?
We go jazz here. We're very eclectic.
Carter, kind of, but I was like writing shitty pop songs and like Frank Zappa-esque bullshit that no one wanted to listen to.
So you were like aspiring jazz musician at that point.
My ratings for my band were in the Mystery Science Theater 3000 ratings fucking category.
I think you started doing stand-up after you graduated. So what kind of flipped the switch?
I did. I was doing stand-up on my final year of school. So I started while I was still in school. I started doing stand-up when I was 20.
Were people still doing it at that Chinese restaurant there in Boston? That was like a
Yeah. In the attic, but
yeah.
What was the name of the comedy studio with
right, that's right.
Run by Rick, what was the guy's name? He was such a legend. He's like a Boston legend.
Oh, I know. I know exactly who you're talking about. He's a friend of Dennis Leary's. Yeah.
He was a perfect weirdo, but he was sweet. He was sweet, but he was a perfect weirdo. The first time I ever bombed, like the first two or three shows I did, I would bring like all my high school friends out and I would like do okay because I had like the training wheels of my high school friends there to laugh. But like the first time I ever did a show, like my fifth show I did there, and my high school friends weren't there. That was the first bomb. That was the first like absolute crickets bomb. And it was such an intense feeling. It's such like a traumatic. I still have PTSD from the first time I performed there. But it makes you, that stuff makes you strong. That was like one of my first shows.
Did you like have to take a break after that?
No, I just knew it was part of the deal. And I just persevered. And you know, starting out in comedy is doing like, it's like bombing for 10 years, basically.
Right.
So, I mean, how did you know how to like craft a set for yourself?
I didn't.
Were you just self-taught?
No, I didn't. I mean, just trial by fire. I mean, just learning from your mistakes. But yeah, I did. I would do Comedy Connection and Comedy Studio and Nick's Comedy Stop. And like half the comedy clubs in Boston were like run by the mob still. Like you'd see like guys from like Goodfellas, like dudes with like sunglasses on at night, like old Italian dudes, like that would smoke cigarettes inside. You could still smoke cigarettes inside. And like, then I had my set on a VHS tape and it was fucking brutal. Some of the most brutal human beings I've ever met were in that era.
Yeah, Boston crowds. Boston crowds are unforgiving for anybody.
Well, also like Bostoners that run comedy clubs and Boston open mic dudes, like angry, bitter Boston comics, just like everybody. It was like brutal people. Some brutal people.
If you're a Yankee fan like I am, they're known as massholes.
Yeah. bitter fucking sociopaths.
You talked about your bass heroes. Who were your comedy heroes? I mean, you have such a singular original style. Who were like some of the folks who were like really... you were paying attention to growing up comedy-wise?
That I knew personally or just like...
No, just like that had a sort of like an influence on you. Like you were like, wow, that's cool. I like what that person does or that's interesting to me.
There was a trifecta. Tom Green came out when I was in 11th grade and then Jackass came out when I was in 12th grade and then Ollie G Show came out when I was a freshman in college. So it was like these three pranks. It was like...
That's the triumvirate for you?
Yeah, because I was like, oh, that's the first time I saw people doing comedy where... they were getting arrested and they were getting hurt. I was like, that's like, it doesn't get more high stakes. Like they were ending up in the hospital or they were ending up in jail. And I was like, and I got a hold of that, like Todd Phillips documentary, that G.G. Allen documentary that Todd Phillips made in college. So I was like, So I was like, God, that guy's so fucking crazy. And he was like, my show, I remember he said, my show's not a good show unless I end up in the hospital or jail. And I was like, what, why? And then I saw these like comedians on MTV doing like these like prank, high stakes pranks where they were like putting their safety and their personal health in jeopardy just for a laugh. And it was just so mind blowing. So that was like the kind of the biggest influence. But I also love, it's not even comedians, little cartoons were big influence. Ren and Stimpy and The Simpsons and Wonder Shows. And
oh, Wonder Shows. And I love that. I can totally see that in your work.
Cult classic. One of these days we're going to get it. We're going to get a Wonder Shows an episode.
Yes, I hope so.
It's the best. And then, and South Park, obviously. But like stand up, the first album that blew my mind was Bill Hicks' Rant in E Minor. That blew my mind. And somebody gave me these old Richard Pryor recordings early on. There's this a compilation called Revolution Evolution. It was like kind of before he, like as he was finding his voice, I want to say the mid-60s, and he was doing jokes like that are still ahead of their time. Mm-hmm. So
That's like the Laugh Records era, right?
Before
he went to Warner Brothers and did the big ones.
Yeah.
I mean, were you someone as a kid that liked to play pranks on people, or was this something that really developed once you saw like the shows you mentioned, Jackass and everything?
Kind of both. It wasn't like pulling pranks on people. I would do like crazy things at school to get in trouble, to make friends and get attention. It was like worth getting a detention if like you were going to make your friends laugh. So I like one time I like bashed my head. You know how the fire hose is encased in like a glass?
Yep.
I remember in the morning at like 9 a.m. I like head butted it. I like bashed my head through it and like broke the glass. As like a joke to like my friend, like, you know, whatever, 15 years old. Bashed my head through it, leaned back, and it cut my forehead and I outstretched my hands like as I was leaning back, and it cut the center of my hands and sliced my head open. And I went to my friends, I was going, stigmata. And I was like bleeding out of my hands and my head. And I bled all the way from the English building to the science building. And my science teacher was like, you have to go to the school nurse. And then I went to the school nurse and she's like, you have to go to the hospital. Like, get out of here.
Did you have a concussion?
I didn't have a concussion. I just had to get stitches because I was like sliced myself open.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus meal plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
You know, back at MTV in those days, you know, with shows like Beavis and Butthead and Tom Green and
Buzzkill
and Jackass, one of the biggest worries always was like, kids are going to do this at home and we're going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
You were that kid. You were that kid.
But I was already doing it. But like those shows didn't make it better. Then those shows, like I felt like vindicated, and then I was doing it more. So me and my friends were already had that in us. But then those shows made it worse, much worse. But Beavis and Butthead, who famously got in trouble for a little kid apparently burning his house down.
Burned down, yeah, exactly.
That kid's an adult now, and somebody tracked him down, and he was like, I burned down my house accidentally. It was not on purpose. I never watched Beavis and Butthead. Beavis and Butthead had nothing to do with it.
They didn't have cable.
They didn't have cable. It was a total satanic panic.
Exactly.
Like fucking, it was total propaganda.
Yeah. We had Mike Judge on. He talked about
it. Yeah, we talked about that.
Oh, good.
Judge.
Okay, okay, good.
It really changed the course of Beavis and Butthead because...
That's fucked up.
You know, because MTV was programming to young adults, there was always this, like, we can't go that far. And it was one of the reasons, you know, we talked about this with Matt and Trey, why we were able to get South Park to Comedy Central, because we were programming to adults and we're like, you can do whatever you want, versus Beavis and Butthead, who have, like, you know, a lot of rules and regulations. But I want to go back to your childhood in Florida, which seems to be this place where all the craziest, weirdest stories spring from. Mm-hmm. It's become a thing. Was that at all evident to you growing up? Did you think it was an odd place? Did you hear a lot of odd, crazy shit?
Florida in general?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I never felt like I fit in. I felt like frustrated and bored and out of place in Boca Raton, Florida. And I knew I like didn't belong there whenever I would visit New York or San Francisco.
Really? The youths didn't love Boca Raton? It wasn't where all the kids wanted to hang out?
Not at all. We were miserable there. So I knew I wanted to get out of there as soon as possible. I didn't realize how fucked up Florida was. It's a lot easier to see in hindsight, especially now. I think it's at its most fucked up. I mean, politically, what's going on there.
So. Now it's a whole other thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew it was weird, and I knew it wasn't for me, and I knew I had to get out.
There you go.
So talk about how you came up with the idea for the Eric Andre Show. Like, were you somebody who studied kind of mainstream late night talk shows or watched them a lot? Or why did you kind of zero in on that genre to mess with?
Yeah, I'm just some of my influences. So Tom Green, Jiminy Glick, Space Ghost, Ollie G Show, they all had like the mock talk show in common. Like, those were my favorite shows. I just thought, like, the talk show convention is like one of the earliest show convention, you know, Steve Allen. So like, it's an easy convention to mock. And my influences were all these mock talk shows. And also, I remember like submitting a tape to try to get an audition for SNL early on. And SNL, I watch SNL sketches and they're so long. They're like 5 minutes. A sketch is essentially one joke. And like after 5 minutes, it's like diminishing returns. And then Wonder Shows came on around the same time I started doing comedy. And Wonder Shows in like understood the purpose of a sketch where it's just one joke. It's a setup and a punchline. And then you move on. And I was like, it was so refreshing watching Wonder Shows and how fast paced it was that I was like, I want to make the fastest absurd mock talk show ever. And I remember watching this Bad Brains documentary and them talking about how they wanted to be the fastest band. I was like, that's such an interesting goal. Just like have the fastest tempo songs. So that's kind of all my influences are like swirling in my brain around, you know, early 2000s.
With the occasional slow reggae dub song in between their record speed.
That came later in Bad Brains evolution. I think they were like having like existential crisis. Also HR is schizophrenic. So, or he has like pretty serious. I'm not saying you have to be schizophrenic to want to play reggae later on, but I like their hardcore songs better than their reggae songs.
Did you have to pitch the show to a bunch of different places, or did you immediately take it to Adult Swim? Like, how did that work?
I did. I got a pitch meeting somehow before I wrote anything down with MTV, and I verbally pitched it scattershot to MTV in this really haphazard way. And they were excited, and then everybody I pitched to got fired, and I never heard anything. And then I kind of softly pitched it to Damona Resnick at NBC, not for NBC, but I did Stand Up for Diversity, and I asked her, I was like, I have this crazy idea for a talk show, but I don't really know how to sell a show. I was like 26 years old. I had no idea. She's like, this show sounds so unique. Maybe shoot like a sizzle for it, like try to scrounge some money. And I had no money at the time. So I was like, I got my friends together, and me and Hannibal and Kitao, who directed all these years, like we went to this like abandoned bodega and filmed like an early version of it. Mm-hmm. And then we went like on the streets. I dressed up like Ronald McDonald and went into a McDonald's, smoked a cigarette and fired everybody. And then we, and then me and Jermaine Fowler dressed up as slaves and crashed the Civil War reenactment and like ran all around the Civil War reenactment. So we shot these hidden camera pranks like in New York and like the tri-state area, and then we shot the talk show portion in an abandoned bodega. And then I got like a cracked version of Final Cut, and I literally bought Final Cut for Dummies, and like I had all these like hard drives and all these like all the shitty gear, and it took me like a year to put together this like 5-minute sizzle. And then I sent it around through my manager to all the networks, and everybody passed except Adult Swim. And Adult Swim loved it. And then we did a pilot in 2011, and then we did the first season in 2012.
Was that their first? And do they have other live action shows other than this?
Yeah. Tim and Eric was on then.
Oh, Tim and Eric, of course. I'm sorry. Right. So were you first, or was Tim and Eric first?
Tim and Eric was their first. Tim and Eric and Saul the Mole Man or something was their first live action. And then.
And was Children's Hospital? It was around the same time too, I think. Right.
Children's Hospital came out right, I think, right before me. Mm-hmm. And then, and then Steve Brule, a whole bunch of stuff. Once they like shook the mandate that it had to be animated, like the floodgates were over. So the timing was good too. And they hadn't had a talk show since Space Ghost. So Mike Lazo was very pumped to do the show. Mm-hmm. Loiter Squad as well came out around the same time. So it's like Children's Hospital, Loiter Squad, me, my show.
We're excited to have you today. We're excited to talk about, you know, your show, but we certainly haven't talked enough on this show about Adult Swim and what an amazing brand, you know, that was and still is. And honestly, you know, I was at Comedy Central when all this was going on and they were kind of rising. I mean, they started to really eat our lunch after a while.
Yeah.
Particularly after they got, you know, all Seth's animated shows. But
oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, they just were doing incredible, really inventive, innovative, you know, kind of pushing the envelope stuff all the time, and scoring most of the time. Really talented bunch of people over there, Mike and that crew.
Yeah. God bless. They saved my life. I mean, I wouldn't have a career without Adult Swim and Mike. So, and they were always so creatively nurturing to me and let me do my own thing, make my own mistakes, and we're just there for big picture advice. So, I really have a lot of gratitude towards that company and towards Mike. Yeah.
So can you help us understand the process of booking guests for your show, especially early on? Because, you know, it's never clear. Do they know what they're getting into, or do they not know what they're getting into?
They know nothing. I mean, we tell them nothing. But the booking process is an entire spectrum between almost bold-faced lying or telling them like the minimal amount of truth to get them there. Also, you can hide in broad daylight where you just like, you don't really like omit anything. And like we had Damon John on from Shark Tank, and I don't think we lied. We were just like, hey, you want to do this Adult Swim talk show? It's like fun and the kids love it. And people just want stage time. And when people are doing press, they're just like doing like an onslaught of media. And I think they're just like rolling into the next thing. And some people we will kind of, it's case by case, I would say. It's case by case. But we try to tell them as little as possible to get them into the studio.
But it must be harder now because, you know, the show has, you've done multiple seasons.
You can go on YouTube and see all this crazy stuff.
Yeah, but we don't tell them they're going on the Eric Andre show. Sometimes we don't tell them the name of the show. We'll be like, hey, we're doing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we'll be like, hey, we're doing a show on Turner Networks, and it's called Weekend Tonight, and it's a great talk show. And like, that's all we'll tell them. So they're not meeting me until I'm on camera. We're like, the green room was a trailer that was like across the street from the stage, and we would like keep them in this little like prison cell until we shoot, and we'd have a PA walk them to the set. So they're like, they're not seeing me until like they're walking on camera, and they're not hearing my name or the name of the show unless they absolutely have to for whatever reason. But we don't tell them anything, or we try not to.
It's produced like a full out prank show almost.
Yeah. It is.
Everything is kept under wraps to a large degree.
Yeah. It's kind of like Punked, but you have to bring them into the kill zone rather than go to them. So
that's hard.
It's very hard. It's very hard. And it's a whole spectrum. Sometimes we do tell them the name of the show if it doesn't matter either way. And at the end of the day, whether they know me or not, like we had Lil Yachty on and he knew me, and I just asked him, I was like, come on and do the show. So he knew I was going to fuck with him, but they don't know how. So it's a whole spectrum of like, okay, they know they're coming on the show. They know I'm going to fuck with them, but they don't know how. There's like that part of the spectrum all the way to like, we're not telling them.
To Lauren Conrad.
My name, the name of the show. Yeah, full Lauren Conrad.
Is Lauren Conrad, do you think she was the most surprised and unprepared guest that you've had for what was going to go on? Or was somebody else even more shocked than she was?
I mean, there was a lot of people.
Demi Lovato was another one.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people coming out in this season that are pretty damn shocked. We tried to vaccinate Chuck Liddell, and he's like a pride. He's like an MMA fighter guy.
UFC guy.
He did not want to be vaccinated. He was like, did not.
Holy crap!
He did not. We had the syringe all ready for him, and he did not. He was not stoked on that. No, he wasn't stoked on that.
And then that now his name is escaping me. That dude from that great actor from The Wire. And Bosch.
Lance Reddick.
Lance Reddick. I saw that clip got all of a sudden resurfaced after he passed.
I would say he was the only guest in the history of the show that was in on it. He just like, because like we needed him. We wrote a bit for LeVar Burton. LeVar Burton couldn't show up. So we had this outfit that was half Kunta Kinte, half Jordy LaForge. So when Lance Reddick showed up, we're like, hey, we already bought this costume. Can you just put this on? And then he put it on and he like came to life.
Yeah, that was amazing.
So like the interview part, I was like trying to shake him and he like was unshakable. And then we were like, I think we just cut. And we were like, hey, can you put on this Jordy LaForge Kunta Kinte outfit? He was like, okay. And then he just like improvised. So, but like we don't, after season two, we didn't do any, we didn't even like want to, we called it wrong side of the desk. We're like, even if you let one guest in on a little bit, it compromises the rest of the show because then people are like, all right, who's in on it and who's not? So going forward after that, we were like, everybody, nobody can be in on it because even if you fake one or not fake it, but like, even if you let one guest on like the other side of the desk, so to speak, it jeopardizes the experience for the viewer for the rest of the guests. So it's just easier to just like not have any guest in on anything. And like, that's the one message you.
Right.
It's like bad trip. When we started Bad Trip, Jeff Tremaine goes, every single reaction in this movie has to be 100% real. We can't fake a single reaction. Even though we're trying to get narrative information from these real people, every single reaction has to be 100% real. Because as soon as you make one fake, they might as well all be fake. And the audience can smell it. They just know when it's fake and when it's real. They can just fucking, they feel it in their bones. So he's like every single, even if it's a little teeny, like a guy at a gas station going, like we had this guy walk up at a gas station and I just went, hey man, you know where there's a bar around here? And the guy genuinely was like, there's a place called Electric Cowboy. We just needed like a little setup plot thing. And he really said that in that we didn't go up to him and like, hey, can you say, we're making a movie. Can you say that? Like, even like exposition, Jeff was like, even that has to be a real reaction. We can't tell somebody to say a line.
Wow.
So that's kind of like our motto for Eric Andre's show now. It's like no guest can be in on anything. Like they just have to all be tortured equally.
I would imagine, especially with the celebrities, you get people get pissed off afterward, or their reps get pissed off. Like Lauren Conrad's people got mad at you.
I was going to say, do any of your booking people last more than one season?
We've been through a few. I mean,
it seems like a thankless task to me.
Yeah, we've been through a few. The team we had this year was like amazing. Like we've had some great teams of people, and it's hard. It's very hard. It's very hard because they have relationships for other shows. You know what I mean? They don't just work on my show. So they have like relationships with publicists for other shows. So you got to really find like a rogue group of people willing to compromise their other relationships. I mean, the Lauren Conrad was the best was, you know, I'm interviewing her. I'm vomiting. I'm eating it back up. She's freaking out. And then her publicist is like, not stoked, you know, she's like ripping us a new one. Oh, you're banned in Hollywood. She's giving that speech. She's calling Adult Swim. She's calling, almost performative though. She's calling Adult Swim. She's calling my reps. She's like yelling at everybody. She's like burning the house down. And then we found out that Jimmy Kimmel's son was an intern in our crew. And I was like, wait a minute, Jimmy Kimmel's son is an intern? And I went up to Kevin Kimmel and I go, wait, your dad's Jimmy Kimmel? He's like, yeah. And I go, you think your dad would do this show? And he's like, I don't know, let me call him. And he called Jimmy Kimmel. He's like, Dad, you want to do this like crazy talk show? And he was like, sure. You want to just come over tomorrow? It was like weirdly easy. And then after the Lauren Conrad's publicist burned the house down, Jimmy Kimmel was like emailing me and he was like, hey, just get, this is my publicist. Just let them know all the information. And it was the same PR code.
same publicist.
Same company. And they were just like, what time would you like Mr. Kimmel to show up? Like, hate their words.
Jimmy does love a prank though. That's his thing. He's a big prank guy.
Yeah. And he was hard to prank. He was kind of like stoned and unflappable. He was tough, but he loved it. And now we're working on a prank show together. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, me and Johnny Knoxville and Gabrielle Chidobert are doing a prank show on ABC and Kimmel's, Kimmel's EPing it. And
So tell us about that.
Kimmel and Knoxville. Okay. I don't know if I'm allowed to, but I will. I think it's whatever.
Let's break some news, man.
It's basically Prank Tank. It's like Shark Tank for pranks. So like a guest will, you know, me, Knoxville and Gabby are the judges. A guest will come on in the studio and be like, I want to prank my cousin. They're always pranking me. I want to get them back. And this is the idea I have. And we either yay or nay it. And then if we yay it, then we help them produce their prank. And then it's off to the races. So yeah, it's pretty sweet.
So how do you come up with your ideas for your pranks? And do you just have like a running Google Doc with just nonstop prank ideas that you just keep adding to? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, well, we have a writer's room. It's a pretty traditional process. Like, we have a writer's room for the first 2 weeks. We have like our favorite comedic minds in that room. And then me and my writing partner, Dan Curry, will just sit with all the notes that come out of that room and go through and pick out our favorite ones. And we'll have like, literally like a beautiful mind wall of like 1,000 index cards of like every little gag we can do to a guest and every little street prank we can do. And then we like whittle that down. And then it's also like subtractive part of the process. And then once we go into a season with 44 street pranks and like 200 gags that we can do for a guest. And then like Dan and I will refine that list with Kitao, our EP director, and we'll add and subtract like all throughout the production process, and especially as we're booking guests. But we have like the gags go into pre-production before we even start booking guests, because we don't really know who the guests are until very last minute. Mm-hmm. So we just have all the departments cooking on the gags while talent booking is getting the guests.
And what about like Adult Swim and Standards and Practices? Do these gags, you have to like run this stuff by them, and how much? And where's the line?
I remember the best S&P note we ever got in the history of the show was, Eric can only defecate out his organs if it looks unintentional. Fucking craziest bit of poetry I've ever heard of S&P. So I filmed, like we did set, you know, in the beginning of each episode, I destroyed the set. So during set destruction, I had a bit where I was like going to shit out my organs and like double dutch rope with my colon or something like that. So he filmed me. I was like, I'm running. And then I looked at the camera and I go, oh, that was unintentional.
I think there's a great coffee table book in like Standards and Practices notes and productions that go back and forth. I've always told the South Park guys they should do a book of their correspondence with Standards and Practices.
That's such a good idea. I'm going to text my writing partner that right now.
I'm telling you, it's a winner, dude.
We should include S&P notes from the show. You know what? S&P gets a little sensitive. I tried to bring a list of their notes on Conan or Colbert, I think, one time, and like somehow they caught wind and shut it down. They're a little touchy sometimes. They get a little touchy.
Well, it's because they have standards.
They have standards and they have practices.
Have you ever gone to shoot like a, you know, one of your pranks or man on the street things, and it just, you're not getting the responses you want and you have to completely nix it? Or do you?
All the time. That's why we shoot so many, because so many fail. You're just going to have
a kill rate.
Yeah, you just got to overshoot. Mm-hmm. The movie, too. Like, you just got to shoot. Pranks fail all the time.
Speaking of movies, of course, you did the hilarious Bad Trip I remember very specifically, you were looking for distribution after you shot it, and I was at Quibi, and I think you would have rather killed yourself than sell it to Quibi and have it chopped up into 10-minute bites. I remember the look on your face during the meeting.
The beauty of the movie is that it functions like one cohesive 90-minute thing. So you like, and it's like, and Prager essentially sketches. So it's like, it kind of defeats the entire purpose of you chopping up if you chop the movie. You know what I mean? So
yeah, they're not sketches. It's part of a longer.
Also, no disrespect to Quibi. I think Netflix
or all disrespect time, to Quibi.
I think at the time Netflix had a few more eyeballs,
just a few
than Quibi.
No offense, Doug, but not wanting to be on Quibi was the right response.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry. No,
you're right again, Eric.
Is there a guest that you've always wanted to have on the Eric Andre Show and you just couldn't, you've never been able to make it happen?
When all the controversy was coming out, we were trying to get Bill Cosby on the show.
Oh, shit.
At the height of Hannibal.
At the height of Hannibal, yeah.
At the height of Hannibal's water.
Wow. How did that conversation go with his people?
We didn't get very far. Yeah, we were trying to have like, we're going to have him on the show and Casey Anthony and the DC Sniper.
Oh, my God.
Armin Meiwes, the German computer technician that ate that guy's penis and killed him. Can you imagine?
And the show is coming back soon, in June, right?
Yeah. We got a sixth season.
So, and you do the seasons or not? I mean, you've been doing six seasons over how many years now?
10 years, decade.
So that's a nice, that's almost like a Curb schedule. You got like a nice, get a lot of room from your friends and partners at Adult Swim.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're coming back after like a 3-year hiatus.
Yeah. It's not even our biggest hiatus. Our biggest hiatus is between season 4 and 5, because I was making bad trip on and off.
Right. So, I mean, has anything changed about your approach to the show or anything different that we should expect?
Not really. I mean, we're just yielding a higher result. We know how to produce street pranks better. Hannibal's not back. Felipe took Hannibal's co-host position, so that's a big change. And then for season five, I gained 40 pounds. So it's just like eating melted ice cream all the time. And then for this season, I lost 40 pounds and I got ripped. I got like jacked for this season. I was literally consulting with Kumail on like what to eat.
Body transformation.
Yeah. I did a body transformation. I'll never do either again. I won't do skinny, fat, buff. Only if like Marvel's swooping in and
I was gonna say
paying for the doctor. I'm not. It's so horrendous. Any body transformation, I'll leave that shit to Christian Bale. It is like not. It's too difficult. I'll never do it, any of them again.
Isn't there a Marvel superhero like the Prankster or something that you could play? Like, you know.
Yeah, the schlubby middle-aged Prankster.
Yeah, I would love to see that.
That's a body mod I'm ready for.
have the idea of like doing a traditional talk show ever of interest to you? Anybody ever approach you?
I thought about it, but I'd have to figure out where it could still be my, no one's ever approached me, but you know, whenever there's that big, like changing of the guards every whatever, 5 to 10 years when, you know, whoever has the,
when the old white guys leave their posts.
I think about it, but it's a tremendous amount of work.
It's a big commitment.
It's a big commitment. And
harder than it looks too.
It's a ton of fucking work and it's, you got to really love it. That's it. That's your job. That's your life.
You got to want to be there every night.
You got to want to be there every day and you got to want to be in the whatever town it shoots in. And you got to just be like, that's it.
Would you do a Daily Show's shot like people are doing now? Is that any of interest to you?
Like do a little like 3-day Daily Show bender?
Yeah.
Maybe.
They have not asked you yet?
No.
They didn't. I asked John Mulaney this question and they haven't asked Mulaney either. What are they doing at Comedy Central? They should be asking both of you.
Oh, I don't know.
They're too busy asking Al Franken.
Al Franken's doing it?
He did it already. Yeah.
He did it.
Yeah. I don't know enough about politics, maybe. I don't know. I might.
That might be a good thing.
Yeah, maybe.
That might be a good thing.
Yeah, I interviewed Alex Jones out of any of them. I'm maybe the only one that they've had that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I jumped on. I crashed his like Bikers for Trump rally at the RNC in 2016 and almost like got killed by a mosh pit of angry men.
Yeah, I'm sure they were lovely folks.
I'll send it to you in the chat here.
Yeah, oh, cool. Thanks.
Watch it. You can watch it on your own time. This is the closest. This is the closest I've come to death during.
Oh, really?
Well, I wasn't in a great. I wasn't in a safe. I wasn't in a safe working environment.
No. Have you ever doing your intros where you bust up the set? Have you ever actually like hurt yourself doing that?
Yeah, John Cena threw me through a shelf, and that didn't hurt. But then the shelf wasn't rigged right, and the sandbags didn't. I don't know. Like the shelf came over and clocked me in the head, and I got a concussion. And I had to get a CAT scan.
Oh my gosh!
The first two seasons, I didn't have a stunt coordinator or any pads or padding or. And anybody training me how to do a stunt, right? So I was just bashing through, nor stunt double, nothing. I was just jumping off of furniture and crashing onto like concrete over and over and over and over and over again. And just like coming out of that wrecked. I'd be wrecked at the end of every season. Mm-hmm. My shoulders all fucked up. And my back. I remember I was interviewing Vivica Fox and I jumped up and crashed my butt. I like just like jumped up and like sat on the table and the desk, and the desk is like paper thin, and I went through and I landed with my tailbone right on the ground, which is like a millimeter of carpet and just concrete, solid concrete, and it sent like this shock wave up my spine, and my back like seized up, and I was like the Hunchback in Notre Dame for the rest of the season. I was just like, oh.
You are so the bastard child of Tom Green and Johnny Knoxville. There is no doubt about it.
I mean, Knoxville's really great. I mean, he got a brain hemorrhage in the last minute.
I was gonna say he's knocked his body up really.
No,
really
he's bad. Fucking great. He's done 16. He's gotten 16 concussions and a brain hemorrhage. Oh, like that, I'm not willing. That's fucking Lord. Crazy. Yeah, that's fucking gnarly. Why? He has no. He doesn't experience pain. Like those guys don't experience pain. It's fucking crazy. They're like carnies. They're like the most successful carnies.
You mean other than wrestlers?
Yeah. Like Steve-O would put those like deep sea jellyfish on his head and shit like that. It's fucking crazy. Those guys are crazy. The amount of pain they can tolerate.
So, Doug, should we ask the traditional last question, or did you have something else? Well,
I just had one question before we go. Before our last question is: do you have like an all-time favorite Eric Andre Show prank or moment, like something that just sticks out as like, man, that was it.
I think the Alex Jones interview, honestly, when I jumped on stage and I asked him to fuck my wife in the middle of his rally.
All right, there you go. We got that answer.
Yeah.
All right, Jen, go for it.
All right. So our traditional last question is, what is your favorite basic cable TV show of all time, barring anything that you've worked on?
Ren and Stimpy. That's the most influential. It came out when I was 10 and was off the air when I was 13. And those are formative years. It was like Ren and Stimpy was on and Beavis and Butthead. And also like the music at that time, it was like Wu-Tang and Cypress Hill and Beck and Sonic Youth and Beastie Boys. It was like, that's all. They're all in that same. And the Simpsons were kind of like in, they're like, really found their voice and like had their like beginning of their like
you just described the mid-90s.
It was
quite a time and a good time. Yeah, I always tell people, you know, back in those days the edgiest thing on television might have been Beavis and Butthead, The Simpsons, and Married with Children.
Yeah,
and totally. Everything took off from there. Totally. And Ren and Stimpy on Nickelodeon just seemed like, that's bad parenting. I don't know.
I love that show.
It should have been on MTV, but it was a Nickelodeon show.
It's hardcore.
I remember the first time I saw The Simpsons, and when Bart Simpson said, "I'm Bart Simpson, who the hell are you?" I'm like, can they do that on television?
Yeah.
I was this is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was hardcore.
Yeah. Broke it all wide open.
Yeah, totally.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for being here. The prank panel's coming to ABC. We'll be looking out for that. And of course, the Eric Andre Show coming back to Adult Swim in June, right?
Yeah, June 4th.
All right. Well, we can't wait. We can't wait to see you. And thanks again for being here.
Yeah, of course.
All right. Eric Andre, a true child of cable television, his heroes being Johnny Knoxville, Tom Green, and Ali G.
That's his holy trinity. you know, and it totally makes sense. And then the fact that he brought up Wondershowzen, because like watching his show reminds me of Wondershowzen. So it made total sense to me that that was an inspiration for him as well.
And if you've never seen Wondershowzen, you should really go try. I don't know if it's on YouTube or not. I haven't looked for it in a long time.
It might be streaming somewhere.
Yeah. Guy named Vernon Chapman, who is a close collaborator with Matt and Trey from South Park. That was his show. It was on MTV. Kind of a surreal sketch show in its own way and super, super funny and way out there. And
yeah.
Something worth tracking down.
And I loved when he was talking about, you know, when he was a little younger, watching Ren and Stimpy and Beavis and Butthead. Like, I feel like that was such a great time for maybe the best time for basic cable, like was like that early to mid 90s, because I feel like every show that I was watching, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but so much of it was the basic cable stuff. Like that was what we were excited about. Including Mystery Science Theater 3000, which someone canceled.
Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, that was that moment when, you know, basic cable was really starting to produce original programming, which prior to that, they didn't do a lot of, they didn't have a lot of money. And by the way, you know, that, you know, Ren and Stimpy came out of a Nickelodeon initiative to create a bunch of animated shows, which they had never done before, which was quite costly for them. And they hit it out of the box originally with, you know, Rugrats, Ren and Stimpy, and a show called Doug. Right. Doug Funny. Remember Doug? And that was a big deal. I mean, you know, I remember even, you know, being at, you know, at MTV in those days. And we were like, you know, because the kind of money they were spending was unheard of at that point. And we were still sort of running around trying to make these like crazy, crazy cheap shows, you know, like things like Tom Green and ultimately, you know, Johnny Knoxville and that crew. But we weren't spending money writing scripts. And so it was really a turning point, you know, for basic cable. And clearly for Eric, you know, highly, highly influential. And when you think about it and you hear him talk about it, you could really see and feel all those influences in his comedy, you know, it's right there. And so he's really the godson of all that.
And I really feel like that was a time, cause he was also talking about, you know, the music of that era, Wu-Tang and Beastie Boys and Beck. And I feel like that was a time when what we considered alternative became very mainstream in music, in a lot of the comedy that he's talking about, like a show like Space Ghost. What a weird ass show. I loved it.
Right.
But it was just very weird. I'm like, I've never seen anything like this in my life.
And he referenced the Beastie Boys and Spike Jonze a lot. I mean, those were highly influential videos and a style and a vibe, you know, that, you know, people hadn't necessarily seen before. And I think it really did transcend, you know, kind of music into, you know, just culture.
You know, those guys are pranksters too.
Absolutely.
Remember when MCA used to always be Horatio Hornblower or whatever at award shows? Like they were all kind of in that same sensibility.
Ecosystem.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Yeah, so yeah, it makes complete sense.
Yeah. Well, he was really great. I really enjoyed chat with him. It's a great show. I'm anxious for it to come back. Honestly, didn't think it was. I thought it was, you know, sort of all said and done. But like I said, he's got kind of a curbs schedule and they let him come back whenever he's inspired to do so. That's pretty cool.
And I'm excited to see Chuck Liddell almost get vaccinated. I'm really looking forward to that.
Is that one of the new ones?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh,
that's what
he said. We'll have to check that out. Well, we hope you enjoyed Eric Andre as much as we did. And Jen and I look forward to having you next time on Basic.
Basic is a Pantheon Media production in partnership with SiriusXM.
Hosted by Jen Chaney
and Doug Herzog.
Produced by Christian Swain and Peter Ferrioli.
Lindley Ehrlich is our assistant producer.
Sound design and music by Jerry Danielson.
Mixed and mastered by Brian Slusher.
Recorded and edited by Zach Spisner.
You can find Basic on Apple Podcasts, the SiriusXM app, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen. If you like the show, please rate, review, and share so other people can find us.
Don't forget to follow the show so you never miss an episode.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.